Hour two of Chase, Willie, and D-Mace live for here at Pete and Terry's as the Preds set to face off against the Stars tonight at home. Central Division rivals. Puck drop is at 7 p.m. Make your way out if you are going to the game tonight. We hope all y'all had a Merry Christmas. We're sitting here, what is it, the 27th, D-Mace, a couple days after Christmas. You know, people starting to get back in the groove. I know you I know you went down to Dallas. The Texans were asking about your private jet. You end up getting your private jet and flying down to Texas?
I end up going on, what was it, American? Southwest is just, you know, they're not. I would never fly them again during a holiday.
Really?
Never.
Oh, because they had a bunch of people walk out on the holidays.
They were canceling, and I mean, flights were canceled everywhere. And the airline was Southwest.
So
I was able to, you know, both times after, and I still got to get my money back from several airline companies. But finally, I got, you know, American. I got a flight with American Airlines going and coming. So
I don't think travel for either of us was really good because I tried to.
Well, you told me you drove.
I drove to Louisville, and normally it's a 2.5 hour trip, and it took me 9 hours to get there.
Ooh, man,
9 hours because of all the accidents. I mean, semi trucks were in V formations.
Oh wow!
On the high, like lined up. I saw them off the road. People were sliding, going everywhere. So it was really hectic. And I had my baby in the back seat. I had my wife. I had my dog.
Yeah, I would rather.
Everybody's barking at me. So it's
all your fault.
It's all, exactly. So either way, you know, we ended up having. I hope you had a Merry Christmas with your family. I sure did. And I hope everybody listening at home had a Merry Christmas as well. But we've been talking about the Titans. We're going to kind of transition and talk about some big games this weekend. On Saturday, it's the college football playoffs. The first game is going to be TCU versus Michigan at 3 o'clock. And then right afterward is going to be Georgia and Ohio State.
You're so used to saying Alabama.
The first year without them. So you're so accustomed to seeing them in there. So. You got a bone to pick in this fight. We had mentioned, you know, you're a Michigan State guy. The Michigan Wolverines are playing against, Heisman finalist Max Duggan. I'm not sure how this one's going to play out. I mean, I feel like I know what's going to happen in the Ohio State and Georgia game because I just think Georgia's up and above better than any other team in the country. But you know, watching Michigan this season, they had such a cupcake schedule. Mm-hmm. And the last time I did a show here at Bridgestone Arena, I was arguing with a janitor, I believe, who was a Michigan fan, and I had guaranteed that Ohio State was going to beat Michigan. I had guaranteed it on air, and it didn't happen. And now I
hope you ain't make a bet.
No, we didn't. We didn't get that far into it. But Michigan looked really good in that Ohio State game. And what do you see from Michigan, especially going up against a TCU team that kind of came out of nowhere this season, but has a really elite quarterback play with Max Duggan?
I mean, Michigan, as much as I, you know, dislike that team down the street from you know, East Lansing, they have played when, you know, their schedule hasn't been a tough schedule for whatever reason. You know, part of it is the Big Ten has been down this year. But when they played Ohio State, I just thought, like, okay, last year was just a one-year thing. You know, the way they dominated Ohio State. I mean, they physically dominated.
Well, then they had a big time defense. Yeah. You know, Aiden Hutchinson really. It to Nicholas Petit Ferrer in that game.
But I've never, you know, I've never seen, at least as long as I've been watching that rivalry, I've never seen one side just dominate the other side from a physical standpoint.
Yeah.
Now, from a skill standpoint, but from a physical standpoint, I have not seen that in a very long time. Now, we can go back to, you know, the Cooper days, or you can go back to the Bo Schembechler days where they were running the football and it was just physical football, you know, whoever controls the line of scrimmage. But I think even in those times, you didn't get, you know, what I saw last year, what Michigan Ohio State. They physically dominated Ohio State. I felt like coming back this year, that can't happen again.
Yeah.
This Ohio State team, with Stroud at quarterback and all these weapons they have on offense, and they got some good players on defense. They should win this game from a talent standpoint.
That's the same thing that I thought. You know, C.J. Stroud was a really hyped up quarterback last year. Probably would have been the number one quarterback selected in the draft if he was eligible to go last season. And knowing that they were playing in Michigan last year, and Michigan, like you had mentioned, had so many good defensive players and really just out-physical them. I was like, there's no way that 2 years in a row that Michigan is going to play like that. And I feel like, you know, Michigan as a program, you know, they're kind of dialing the clocks back. I mean, they're the one big time major program that really relies so heavily on the run game. I mean, even Alabama now, they're like with Bryce Young, you know, really likes to air it out. And Alabama has gone from being the big running back factory to where their running backs are going first round every year to now it's one or two of their wide receivers are now going in the first round. And it's been a bit of a transition, but Michigan, you know, becoming, you know, making the playoffs last season and now being back in it this season and really relying on their run game is something that's so different to me in the modern-day college football.
Because, you know, these big programs are not doing it that way anymore. You're going to have your outliers that want to play that brand of football. But for the most part, everyone has graduated to – you know, what you see now in college football. You know, spread them out, throw the ball around the yard, let's score a bunch of points, and if we get a stop or two, you know, then we'll win the football game. Well, Michigan has taken the other, you know, the other approach. We're going to – because Michigan tried that whole, let's spread everybody out, throw the ball, and it seemed like that didn't work for them. So they went back to, you know, the foundation, what helped build that program, running football and playing tough, aggressive defense. And that's what Michigan is able to do. And that's what they were able to do to Ohio State this year. Once again, they completely, and I mean completely, dominated Ohio State from the offensive line to the defensive line. Every inch of that field, Michigan dominated Ohio State. We've been waiting for the shoe to drop with TCU. Yeah. That's all we've been saying. Oh, TCU is going to lose this team. They're going to lose to Texas. They're going to lose to Baylor. It's just, their run is over. Ultimately, they end up losing to Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game. But I think TCU has proven that, you know, they are a good team.
Yeah.
They are a damn good team.
And that defense even shows up from game to game. I know it kind of varies. And I remember thinking, just like you, like TCU's eventually going to lose. And I really thought it was going to be that game at Texas in Austin that was the game that they were going to fall. You know, Quinn Ewers being back and all that. I thought Texas was really hot at the time. And they flat out dominated them and held that offense to absolutely nothing. And so it really shows that, you know, although TCU has primarily won off their offense and their quarterback play, that they can also really turn it up on defense. But the question I'm going to kind of pose to you now, you know, Ohio State and Georgia, we haven't really got much into that. But with the two underdogs between TCU and Ohio State, I believe the line for the Ohio State and Georgia game is 6.5. And I think the line for the Michigan-TCU game is 7.5. So relatively, the spreads are closer. Which team would you bank on more likely to pull the upset this Saturday?
I just don't think Ohio State's physical enough. I don't. If their version of physicality was against Michigan, then they're not winning at Ohio. They're not beating Georgia. They're not. They're not going to even come close to beating Georgia.
Yeah.
Again, Michigan physically dominated them. And I don't care if you're an Ohio State fan or not. If you don't think Michigan physically dominated them, I don't know what game you're watching.
Lying to yourself.
Exactly. You are completely lying to yourself. So what makes you think that you're going to now play Georgia, who's the best team, clearly the best team in the country? They can play. The problem with Georgia – when they play other teams is this. Well, the problem for other teams when they play Georgia is this. Georgia can play any brand of football you want to play.
Yeah.
Georgia can throw the ball around the yard. Georgia can run the football. Which one you want? Or we can play really good defense. Which brand of football do y'all want to play?
Yeah.
Because we can play all of them. We can score points and stop you, Tennessee.
Yeah, you know, no, they found that out the hard way.
So we can play any brand of football. It's reminiscent to Alabama. Where did Kirby Smart come from? Alabama. It's whatever brand of football you want to play at that, on that particular Saturday, or, you know, if they play on a weekday, these bowls games are played now. But whatever brand you want to play on that particular day, we can play it, and we're going to win. So Ohio State, if you want to play this air it out game, oh, they can play that too. But the advantage they have over Ohio State is they play good defense. Ohio State is not playing good defense.
So right before we have to go to break, what are your picks for this weekend? Who do you got?
I got Georgia and TCU.
Georgia and TCU.
Yes.
He can't pick Michigan.
I can't, no matter what.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna pick Michigan, and I think I'm gonna pick Michigan Ohio State.
Oh,
I really am. I think Michigan left a bad taste in Ohio State's mouth. I think CJ Stroud. I'm just waiting for the moment. I believe in this kid. I think he's gonna be a really good quarterback. I think Ohio State. Last time they won a national championship, they were the fourth team in, and they pulled the upset on Alabama. I think they do the same thing to Georgia, but. That is all the time we got for right now. But coming up next, we are going to speak with Predators GM David Poile. We're going to get into the team, some of the players getting a little bit healthy, and some of the young talent that has been stepping up into this game. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back into Chase, Willie, and D-Maze. Junie Riddle filling in for Chase McCabe as he is spending the holidays at home. Chase, we hope you're doing well. But right now, we are joined by the Nashville Predators GM, David Poile. David, how are we doing this morning?
I'm good. I hope everybody had a good holiday, a little bit of a break. I know it was a much needed and wanted break here for the Predators, having 3 days off. We just finished our morning skate. Everybody looks real sharp. Everybody made it back into town, so we're ready to go.
Absolutely. So the Predators last week, you all won 2 out of 3 games, and the one loss that y'all had to Colorado was a hard-fought matchup that ended up going down to overtime. So really, it seemed like you all bounced back a bit last week in trying to start off the new year and the holiday season right. Talk to me about the importance of some of the defensemen on the team getting healthy. Ryan McDonough, Carrier, Lazon, and guys like that coming back and making an immediate impact on this team.
Well, that really hurt us. You know, we'll get all the injuries in the back-to-back games all at the same time. And with Borowicki being out, we had four defensemen of our top 7 defensemen in our organization out at the same time. And that was pretty tough sledding there for a bit there, and having their presence back in the lineup has actually, as you can see, made us more competitive. We're winning more games. The pairing of McDonough and Yossi has been really good. I saw a stat there. I think we're like 6-1-2 in the games that they've played together. So that bodes well for the future, and our defensive play has been much better since we got healthy again back on the blue line.
And so I also wanted to kind of get into some of the young players that have really been stepping up this year. I feel like Tommy Novak has been putting up points on a game-to-game basis. You know, Cody Glass, Yuso Parsonen, a lot of these young guys kind of coming in and adding to some really needed depth from last season's team. Can you kind of speak on the impact that some of those young players have had?
In my opinion, every time we've made a change to go down to Milwaukee, it's really given our team a boost. And, you know, you correctly identify those guys. I mean, Tommy Novak is the latest guy to come back in our lineup, and he's got a point in each of the 2 games that he's played. He was the leading scorer down in Milwaukee. He was the guy that kind of drove their power play down there, and now he's been put on our power play, and we've had a little bit more success since he's been in the lineup. So that's a really good thing for a team that has been a little bit offensively challenged this year. Parsonen started off really, really good for us. He's got, I think he's got 7 points now in 18 games, but he's, you know, he's playing in lots of different situations for us. And I think as time goes along that he could be another guy that may not be a top offensive player, but certainly a guy that can contribute on both sides and get that, you know, timely goal every once in a while. So we need this right now. As I said earlier, we just our offense has been off a little bit from last year, and you know, we're losing so many one goal games in terms of getting to overtime or shootouts or what have you, and a little bit more offensive production, and would really go a long way. And that's the reason why we made the latest call up with Tommy Novak.
We're talking with Nashville Predators GM David Poile. Now, David, is your evaluation of the team a little bit different? Because Junie just talked about the defensemen that were out, and we saw the play of the Predators because they were out. It sort of diminished a little bit. But now that they're back, you see a different team. You got all your guys, your defensemen back. Do you evaluate this team a little bit different now that you are more healthy?
Well, the answer to that is yes, but again, we've played a little over 30 games here, and as we've said on other shows, that our consistency is not where we want it to be, and right now we're what I was called, we're below the line in terms of making the playoffs, and we know we have to play at a certain rate. That's probably close to 11, 12 games over 500 to make the playoffs. I think everybody in our organization is aware of that, and we need to. We need to start getting some momentum. We need to start getting, some significant winning streaks for us to accomplish that. We need to be able to beat the better teams in the league because we play them a lot now in our remaining schedule. And Dallas is our opponent tonight. Dallas is in our division, so we've got a couple more games with them. And we need to start knocking off teams that are above us in the standings. So, again, I guess my answer is a little bit regardless of injuries because everybody has them. We're going to have to find a way to play at a higher level than we currently have. And, the signs recently have been good, both on the power play, some of our better players contributing more, our call-ups like Novak contributing a little bit. Our goaltending has been really good with UC Saros carrying the bulk of the games at the moment. So, it feels like we're coming a little bit, but the proof is in the win-losses. Tonight, first game after Christmas, would be a good start here by getting a W against Dallas.
We're still speaking here with Nashville Predators GM David Poile. Now, David, John Hines, since he's been the head coach here in Nashville, it's kind of been a tale of two halves of the season. We saw in 2020, they kind of had a rough start, and then they brought it on late. And then last season, they had a really a good start to the season, and it kind of fell apart towards the tail end. Now, this season, you've kind of got some new pieces in there, and it's been a little bit of a rough start with that. The chemistry along with injuries. What do you see with this team that makes you feel like, John Hines can do it again and kind of turn this team around and really get that final push as we start getting closer to the second half of the season?
What I saw last year was a team that, nobody predicted to play very well. Certainly nobody predicted us to make the playoffs, and we were good enough to make the playoffs. I felt in this offseason we made some changes, adding veterans like Niederreiter, who's got 11 goals for us, and McDonough, who's won a couple of Stanley Cups with Tampa Bay. I thought that kind of solidified our team. Unfortunately, what we've seen is, we've had some good games and we've had some highs, but we've also had, some inconsistencies, and we've had some, maybe you could say some team play that is not representative of winning hockey, and we certainly had some individuals that have not played up to their potential. So for me, hope springs eternal that we have the parts to play better. I mean, right now, you don't have anybody that's having what I would just call a career season. Usually you have, some players that do that, and that's what we need. We need some guys to step up to live up to their potential, to have a, career year. And we have still over half of the season to accomplish that. But, with each game that goes by, the opportunities become less and less. But, right now, as I said earlier, I'm feeling more optimistic. Our team is healthy. Our team is playing pretty good. We're starting to score some goals in the power play. And we need our top players to be our top players. And if we can get a little bit more in each of these areas, I think we could we could be there. And all of that, I don't think I'm saying anything that I don't think that we could accomplish. I think it's there individually, and as a team, I think we could do it. It's been disappointing so far this season, but like I say, I'm optimistic that we're going to start playing our best hockey the second half of the season.
Now, the last question I have for you, since we spoke to you, Roman Josi did break the record by getting 2 points last Wednesday against Chicago to pass David Legwon for the most points in Predators history. Can you just kind of quickly touch on how the impact of Roman Josi has been elevating for this Predators franchise since he's been here?
Yeah, it's, these are the stories that you, as a hockey guy, as a scout, that you dream about a Swiss player, and Swiss players have not always been on the top of the charts in terms of the best players in the NHL. A second-round pick and not a first-round pick making it like this, and just a great person, what he does off the ice in our community as a leader of our team and as our best player. I mean, this guy's been fantastic. I mean, if we had a couple more Roman Josi stories, it would make my year, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time, David. The Predators are set to take on the Dallas Stars tonight in a big-time Central Divisional matchup as they look to really get back in the hunt for the playoffs. Again, David, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Happy New Year as well.
Happy holidays, everybody. Okay. Bye-bye.
That was Predators GM David Poile, again, as the Preds are set to take on the Dallas Stars tonight at Bridgestone Arena, 7 p.m. puck drop. We are going to get back into the Titans conversation, the future of the Tennessee Titans, in which direction this franchise should go after Mike Vrabel has mentioned that this team is at a crossroads. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D-Mates here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, we are live here from Pete and Terry's Tavern right here at Bridgestone Arena. Big game tonight for the Nashville Predators. We just spoke to GM David Poile talking about the state of the team. He seems to like what he sees. And, you know, they got a big test tonight against Central Division foe Dallas Stars. So it's going to be really, really nice to see what this team has got against a very formidable opponent tonight. But we are getting back into the Titans, and I want to touch back on a big conversation that D-Mace, Willie, and I had last week that, you know, it really took on the bulk of our show because we were getting a lot of interaction about it. And after this weekend, losing to the Houston Texans, I want to touch back with you all because y'all were kind of calling me crazy last week. Uh-huh. And I want to know where we're at right now. The future of the Tennessee Titans, what should they do? Where should this franchise go to? Should Vrabel still be the head coach? Should they hold on to Ryan Tannehill? Should they keep the core together? D-Mace, has your opinion changed about the Tennessee Titans after seeing them this weekend? Or are we still stuck that this core still deserves to have another year to go at it?
I mean, whether that deserve is a strong word. You know, do they deserve, considering what's happened to the team? I can, you know, say yes, or I can make the argument that yes, they deserve another opportunity because of what has happened with the injuries on this team, and guys like Kevin Byard, who has been here from the beginning of the John Robinson / Mike Vrabel regime, even though John's not here any longer. Guys like Kevin Byard, you know, Ryan Tannehill, even Taylor Lewan to an extent. Yeah, because they've been here for the long haul, and they've seen it, especially Taylor. He's seen it when it was bad, and he's seen it when it was good. So when you ask the question, should they, in a sense, run it back with this team, you know, part of me, a small part of me says yes because of those guys. But then, you know, reality sets in, and it says that you can't, you've won as far as you can go with this group as it sits now. Each year, you know, we walk into, you know, and I don't know if you've ever experienced this in school when you're in that, you know, that classroom where it's one of those huge conference type rooms,
yeah,
or auditorium type classrooms. And the teacher get up there the first day and she tells you, or he tells you, listen, you know, person on the right or left, they may not be here, you know, when a semester ends, you know. That's how the NFL is every year. The guy you're sitting next to might not be there the next year. So you try to take advantage of the opportunity that you have now. Well, the Titans have had their opportunity. And for whatever reason, they've blown it. I don't think you could then continue to hold. It would be like 4 years if you hold on to this same core of guys. Mm-hmm. It would have been past 4 years. I think if you can't, because it's not like these are young guys.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you can't go past 4 years with veteran guys, 4 or 5 years, and say, we still got a shot. No, y'all passed that window. Now you got to find some way to systematically, you know, retool, rebuild, you know, add to, subtract from, whatever you want to call it. That's what you got to do with this team now. But even in that, Jay, you don't want this team to fall completely off the map.
No, absolutely.
So how do you do it? I think you have to get rid of some of your big time players.
Well, just for me, whenever I look at, you know, especially in the NFL, mm-hmm. a cap situation, you know, I always go to Spotrac.com. That's my go to that I like to look at. And I'm looking at there, and I'm seeing some guys that they can definitely free up some money, because right now they're in a bad space with the cap. And I don't care who says what about the cap. The cap is there.
The cap is real. Whether you can finagle the cap or whatever.
Well, I always put it this way when I hear people that say that the cap's not real. I always say, well, you know, the cap is not real when you have an owner that can dish out a lot of extra money, which the Titans are not in that situation. So,
which makes the cap real now.
Exactly. For this team, it's real. But going on that, I mean, you look at guys like Zach Cunningham, Robert Woods, you know, Taylor Lewan at his age, at his money,
and his injuries
that he's had the last couple years. Guys like that can go, but I really want to touch back on this Ryan Tannehill conversation then. Uh-huh. So if you said that their window has now passed and that you don't see them going further than what they've already done, does Ryan Tannehill deserve to come back next season? Are we still in agreement that he needs to come back next year, or are you going to kind of fall towards on, you know, my side of the argument to where I think it might be time to move on? If you have a way out and it's not going to cost you too much money, is it worth moving off of him in order to, you know, give it a year to kind of retool and revamp the roster?
Well, two problems, you know, with that. The first problem is I don't think this fan base is ready for, you know, essentially dismantling this team and trying to build it back up, because it's going to take some years if that indeed happens. It's not going to happen overnight, especially if you don't have a quarterback that's able to sustain or hold on to it as you're building. And Titan fans, as much as y'all, some of you say, you know, dismantle this whole team, y'all don't want to go through that.
Yeah.
Y'all don't want to. The true Titan fans that have been with this team since 97 or got with this team, you know, in 99 or 2000, they've seen a decade of bad football. And they don't want to go back there. Hell, I don't want to go back there.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, have to talk about a bad team every game. I don't want to be in the Houston Texans shoes where you're trying to find something to hold on to. We can go that route, or here's the second problem with that, that if you choose to do that, which you can, people like Jeffrey Simmons ain't sitting around and waiting. He's not.
So he
wants to win.
Well, and this kind of goes back to my point on this. Mm-hmm. I believe that the defense, as it's constructed now, the players that are under contract, and I know Jeffrey Simmons is still waiting to get off of his rookie deal and get that long-term extension. I just don't think that the way that this team is constructed currently and the amount of talent that they have on defense when healthy. I mean, we're looking at a completely different defense right now because of all the guys that are missing, and they're still playing at a decent level. So what I'm saying is let's retool the offense. I think everybody on offense needs to be looked at on whether or not they should be on this team. Offensive line, wide receivers, quarterback, everybody. And I think that if they were to kind of rearrange things and look at different options on the offensive end and keep that defense intact, that gives you a window to look and retool in order to say, hey, we got our defense,
but the defense,
we can go young on offense.
The defense doesn't want to go through that anymore. They've carried this team basically for the last 3 years, really. They've carried this team.
Last two. Because 2020, that was a top five offense in the league.
But that defense came on toward the end of the season, I think, that year. They started to play a little bit better. They were still giving up points, but they started to play a little better. Now, last year and this year, that defense has carried this team. I don't think you can go into another season knowing at the beginning of the season as a defense, we got to carry this team one more time. That's too much stress and pressure to be putting on that defense. Because eventually, like this year, they're going to start having injuries. It's not a coincidence after they play almost 100 plays against Kansas City, everybody started to drop.
Yeah.
After that game, everybody started to get hurt. Why? Because they had been on the field entirely too much. And then you can't ask them to do that over again, especially in the beginning of the year. Like, we need an offense that is capable of scoring some points. Now, to me, you keep the quarterback. Everybody else, really, even Derrick Henry, as much as I love watching him play, as much as I think, you know, hell, besides Steve and Eddie, he'd probably, because I don't put Bruce Matthews sort of in that same boat, because Bruce spent more years in Houston than here in Nashville, but Bruce is a Hall of Famer, so it is what it is. But if you take those two guys, the next guy in line is Derrick Henry. The next guy in line is Derrick Henry. When you're talking about Tennessee greats, he's next in line.
Yeah.
And as much as I wouldn't want to, you know, see him on another team, I think it's going to be best for this team in helping them rebuild, or whether it be Kevin Byard. You know, guys like that that I look at that were cornerstones to when John started building this thing.
Yeah.
Guys that Kevin Byard is going to go down as a Titan great, a top 10 Titan great. I don't want to see him go, but if you're talking about for the betterment of the team, hell, they've done it before, and they're going to continue to do it again. When it comes to a point that we've gotten all that we can get, now we got to figure out a way to slowly retool this team. And sometimes that means big name guys have to go. As much as we may like them, as much as good or as great as they have played for us, It's time to move on. Not because we don't like you as a player, don't think you still play, but as a team, we're not getting any better with you or on our team. So what do we need to do? We gotta either trade you to get rid of that salary, release you to get rid of some of that pressure of the salary, to be able to bring in other guys, rookies, free agents. This offseason is going to be a critical offseason. It's going to be the most important offseason like it was 5 years ago when they start building this team back up. This offseason is going to be that again. And if they don't get it right, they're going to find themselves in a situation Houston is in where they're winning one or two games and trying to figure it out.
We're gonna continue this conversation after the break here. We got Willie joining us at the table. He was just at morning skate and meetings with the Nashville Predators this morning. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here live on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, presented by Hair Club. Hair Club, love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. And also, tune in for the NFL pregame this Thursday night, live from Sonny's Patio Pub and Refuge, located at 1322 6th Avenue North in Germantown. Join Jared Stillman and former Titans wide receivers Chris Sanders and our own Derek Mason from 5 to 7 prior to the Titans taking on the Dallas Cowboy. The NFL pregame is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, Screwball, Peanut Butter Whiskey, Superbook Sports, and Ounce of Hope Cannabis Company. Willie has joined the desk, and Willie, you were listening to Derek and I conversate about a topic that really, you know, obviously it drove a lot of our conversation last Friday, kind of talking about the state of the Tennessee Titans, where they should go from here. And the one thing I do agree with Derek about is that this is going to be a crucial offseason. The decisions they're going to have to make for this team are going to be crucial for the years to come. So, Willie, after seeing what the Titans looked like against the Houston Texans this past Saturday, has your opinion swayed a little bit about the direction of the organization?
I don't think it's swayed. I have looked at the lineup and looked at the guys missing, and it just is so evident. It was tough watching that game on Saturday because they really battled, and they had the ability to scratch out the win. You know, they're in position to win that game. And of all people, Derrick Henry fumbles the ball when I thought they had a chance to go in and really take control of the game. I thought they were going in to win the game. I thought they had a drive going. I thought Derrick Henry was going to run it until he scored, right? They had that kind of momentum, and it all changed after that. It was just too bad. But in the big picture, I don't think it really changes my outlook of knowing that they have big decisions to make at the end of the season either way. And the good thing for them is that even though they lost that game, it's almost like a mulligan. It just means that the winner of the division is going to have a pretty ugly record.
Yeah.
You're going to be coming into the playoffs, whoever wins that game, probably at 8-9 or maybe at best case 9-8. And so if you can just get over that, you're in the playoffs. But so they've got to get one win, and it'll be interesting how they approach this game on Thursday with all of the injury situations. Could they get some guys back if they sit them? You know, it may not be ugly, but it may not be good on Thursday, but they've got to do what they've got to do to put themselves in the best position to win against Jacksonville. So I feel like there's going to be all kinds of time, you know, once they close the book on this season on what to do. But it was another game, D-Mace, to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to start at the top. What's the most important position on your team is quarterback, right?
Uh-huh.
The more I watch Malik Willis, the more I'm saying, I mean, what is the plan at quarterback? He's not the plan. I mean, he hasn't made any progress at all. It's, you know, I know that they don't have any offensive line, and that created some challenges. But he showed no steps forward to me. I was disappointed. I was wanting to see, has he made any advancements in reading defenses, going through progressions, finding guys to throw to? And I saw a paralyzed passing offense
now. And I think what's really crucial about it is knowing when to go, especially with the amount of mobility that he has. Sometimes he would either run too early or he would run too late. And I feel like that's kind of a timing thing that he has to feel out. But when it comes to, you know, his passing game and his accuracy, I mean, you're absolutely right. That interception on the second to last possession, I know his second interception was on a Hail Mary, which, I mean, you have to go and you have to throw the ball and put it in the end zone on that. But the interception prior to that, I mean, he drops back and he looks to his left and he's looking at his primary receiver and he's eyeing him and he's just completely missing the linebacker that's sitting there dropping back, waiting on him and just eyeing him and looking in his eyes. And that's what led to that interception. And I just feel like Malik Willis as a player, where, like you mentioned, he's not progressing in the way that you would want him to. He's not really getting much better. And it just seems like the game is so fast for him, and it hasn't slowed down as much as you would want to see for a guy that is almost done with his rookie year.
Well, this is what I'm seeing too, Derek. I want to hear what you have to say on this one. It's not just that the bad interception happens. They don't even feel confident enough, or he doesn't feel confident enough to even try to throw the ball down the field. It's like they're calling the simplest pass plays. Mm-hmm. There's nothing complicated at all about the routes, about anything. Like, take, for example, I watched a little bit of the Colts last night. Mm-hmm. Nick Foles was awful, right? But he's trying to throw complicated routes. He challenged the defense, and he just, you know, they picked him off. You know, they had the coverage. But at least they had the confidence in a veteran to try to challenge the defense. They're not putting any pressure on the defense. There's no fear at all that, hey, he might be able to pick us apart here. There's none of that. And then even like Junior was saying, I wanted to see him – it really pushed the defense back running, but he stumbled a lot. you know, it takes him a second to get going. He's really not running the ball very well either. So I do wonder what they do here. Do they try Dobbs for a half against Dallas just to see what it looks like? I don't know. They're between a rock and a hard place, but I don't know short term and long term where he sits right now. I was disappointed that I didn't see more.
Yeah, he's not. There's a disconnect. Something's going on with him. There's a disconnect. One, you know, he's, you know, that rookie learning curve, everybody goes through it. Some are better than others, and he's going through it right now. Two, I'm seriously starting to wonder what is he learning in the classroom. Are they developing him in the classroom the way they need to be? These are all questions that everybody should be asking, but because we are seeing the same things happen each time he starts. We're seeing the same inconsistencies.
Yes.
I'm seeing the same hesitation, the same jitterness. It's like his head and his feet are in two different worlds.
Yeah.
You know, they're not synced together. What he's seeing with his eyes, what his body is telling him to do are not synced together. So to me, some of it has to go back to what's being taught in the classroom, because whether it be him or Woodside, what you told us with Woodside is he wasn't developed enough. You didn't believe in him enough, so you moved on from him to give the rookie an opportunity. Well, the rookie hasn't gotten better. So, yes, it's their responsibility as players, but then it falls too on the coaches. Who are they learning in a way that's going to be beneficial to them, where they can take what they've learned in the classroom and implement it on the field? There's another disconnect with that. So either, like I told you earlier, Jay, either they're coaching it or they're allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
One of the two.
I'll give you another one. I don't see mechanically.
Yes.
I don't see him delivering the ball. I don't say to myself.
With no confidence. There's no confidence there.
But also, I don't see, like, I know this is, again, we've talked about this with Farley. Mm-hmm. What did they see, right? You know, he slipped to the third round. A lot of people thought he was first round. But I haven't seen him make throws, even in the preseason, not enough anywhere, where I say, wow, that's a big-time throw right now. Mm-hmm. Dropped it right in there. You know, touch, you know, firing it between two defenders, over the linebacker. And I don't see those throws. So, like, Am I wrong? Like,
no, you're not. You're
like, he's not throwing that pretty ball. Uh-huh. Like, you know,
but I go back to, what is he being taught?
Yeah.
Because, again, you said Woodside wasn't developed enough that you got rid of him in place of a rookie guy that you drafted in the third round that you knew wasn't ready to play if your quarterback went down. So you chose to get rid of one guy to bring in another. And it doesn't seem like neither one of those guys are being developed.
Like, if Gardner Minshew was quarterbacking on Saturday, let's just take that. I mean, that's just a one example. That's probably a bad example because he's better than most backups.
Yeah.
He has been a starter. But it just shows you the backup is important.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, if they had a Gardner Minshew playing these games instead of Ryan Tannehill, this is, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? I understand why they picked Malik Willis, but to show the faith, we talked about this throughout the preseason, is he your backup?
Yeah.
Can he be your backup? I thought he would be the backup next year. Mm-hmm. That was my opinion throughout the training camp. They took the leap of faith. Either they thought, you know what? I don't think Ryan Tannehill's going to get hurt. I think they just – they basically rolled the dice on that. Yeah. Really.
It was quite arrogant.
In a position to not succeed. He's not ready to help this team at all right now.
I think it's very apparent.
I think it was
a bit arrogant on the Titans, especially when you saw the injury history of Ryan Tannehill in Miami, to think that this was going to be sustainable and that it couldn't happen. So, you know, a lot of questions need to be answered. We do have Mike Vrabel going on in the press conference. We're going to head to break. We're going to have Mike Vrabel live from the podium on the other side here. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.